You thought Millard, Kiprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. It's time for the Hour of Howarth on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt, or the Jeff Blair Show now presenting the Hour of Howarth with Stephen Brunt and Jerry Howarth. That's a lot for me to spit out.
It's official, though. The voice guy said
the voice guy, Cutler, yeah. Yep. So it's done. We've got an official Hour of Howarth voice.
I'm flattered.
Jerry Howarth. I don't even need to. All you need to do, you hear that voice. You don't need to tell you who it is, but it is Jerry Howarth, the voice of the Blue Jays, who had a pretty good ALDS. Lots of stuff to call. There's nothing like a couple of walk-off wins. And now we've got the ALCS, which starts on Friday. It'll be Cleveland against the Toronto Blue Jays. And first pitch will be just after 8 o'clock. Jerry, Joe, and Michael will call the game. And, of course, it'll be on Sportsnet Ontario as well. We're going to open the phone lines, as we always do when Jerry's in studio, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Anything you want to talk to Jerry Howarth about. Jerry, before we start talking about this series, I want to talk to you about the Cleveland Indians, because I've noticed, and I've actually had a couple of listeners send me an email reminding me that you have never called, or you haven't called them the Cleveland Indians for well over 20 years, or the Atlanta Braves for that matter. I'm just going to ask you to explain why that is.
Well, back in 1992, Blue Jays are in the World Series with Atlanta, and all of a sudden you see the tomahawk chop, and I used that. I didn't think anything about it. We had powwows at the mound, and then the Blue Jays, to get there, went through Cleveland, and then at the same time I noticed the red-faced Indian on their logo. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the World Series, which the Blue Jays won, and everybody was so happy and rejoicing, in the offseason I've received one of the best fan letters I've ever received. It was from someone, a Native American, up in Northern Ontario on one of the reservations, and he took the time to write me. And he said, Jerry, I appreciate your work, but in the World Series, it was so offensive to have the tomahawk chop and to have people talk about the powwows on the mound and then the Cleveland Indians logo and the Washington Redskins. And he just wrote it in such a loving, kind way. And he said, I would really appreciate it if you would think about what you say with those teams. I wrote him back, and I said, sir, that's one of the best fan letters I've ever received. And in honor of what your thoughts are, and so many other people too on reservations and Native Americans, for the rest of my career, I will not say Indians or Braves. And if I were in the NFL, I wouldn't say Redskins. And I haven't from that point on.
See, because this has emerged as an issue in the past decade, but I had no, and I remember, I think we may have even talked about this. I remember taking note of the thing, saying, that's interesting. It's very much a personal decision for a lot of people. But I had no idea it went back to 93.
It went back that far for me. And in 1995, who played in the World Series?
Of course,
Cleveland and Atlanta. But it's always interesting to see things in black and white. But when you get a fan letter from someone who has lived it and breathed it and said, in a very eloquent way, it's just so offensive, and we just don't like it. And whether there are other people in his area or around the world who do care for it, it didn't matter to me. He touched my heart. And that was my way of saying, without bringing it up, and you're the first person to bring it up here in years, it was my way of saying, I agree with you and your feelings, and that's how I'm going to honor that and your entire Native American culture.
In conversation with Jerry Howarth on the Jeff Blair Show, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. It will be Cleveland and Toronto in the ALCS. Jerry, how do you think these teams match up?
I think when you look at the season series and it turned out 4-3 Cleveland, I think that pretty much says it all. The Cleveland came in here and they played four games, June 30th, right on through the first 3 days in July. And there were so many interesting things to talk about there, including that 19-inning game where Carlos Santana hits a home run off Darwin Barney. I don't expect Darwin to pitch in this series.
If he does, it's probably not going well for the Jays. That's what it's saying.
So that's number one. And then you start to look at who pitched where, well, and where. And Jay Happ in that series, too, went seven-plus innings, allowed only one run. So there's someone you might want to have face Cleveland a couple of times. Aaron Sanchez, who's pitched very well on the road, had a little tough time later in Cleveland in August when the Blue Jays went over there. And the Blue Jays could have swept that series, but twice Cleveland came from behind, including the back-to-back home runs off Roberto Osuna in the bottom of the ninth inning, the last the inside-the-park home run by Naquin. So how do I look at it? I look at it as a great matchup. I would say the one advantage that the Blue Jays have, and I heard you and Steven talking about all the switch hitters in the Cleveland lineup, but without Carlos Carrasco, who in one of those wins struck out 14 Blue Jays and just completely dominated them, and he's not there, and I'm not sure about Danny Salazar, if you took out two of the Blue Jays' five starters, you'd think, uh-oh, the Blue Jays are in trouble. Well, Terry Francona has kept that team together. Andrew Miller's been terrific, but how many times did people expect Andrew Miller to pitch in the fifth inning or sixth inning? So right now, I would say overall, even though Cleveland has a home field advantage, I would like the Blue Jays from the standpoint of their starting pitching.
Starting pitching depth, yeah. We've had you on here over the last few weeks, a couple of times. But going down, watching the Blue Jays scuffle through September, and kind of the offensive outage, a lot of things through September, which would have caused doubts for a lot of people in the fan base. At what point did you think, they're going to be okay, or that they have a chance to advance here? Was it before the last weekend in Boston? Was it when Encarnacion hits the walk-off in the wild card? At what point do you kind of go, okay, they're kind of the sum of their parts again?
It was after the Friday game in Boston when Brett Cecil came on, gave up the two-run home run to David Ortiz. At that point, I didn't think the Blue Jays might get to the playoffs. I thought there was an opportunity there that was missed on that particular moment. And then I thought two more games here at Boston, Detroit's coming on strong. At that particular point, I think it could have gone either way. And this is the advantage, Stephen, of having a wild card situation with two teams. Well, on Saturday, when the Blue Jays bounced back that character win, and then on Sunday to win again, we had said after the Friday game in baseball, and this goes back to John Wathen for me, I've said this a few times, 1985, Royals are trailing the Blue Jays 3-1 in the American League Championship Series. John was a great friend of mine, catcher for the Royals. And at the end of our conversation in his dugout, he said, remember, Jerry, in baseball, a 3-game winning streak is nothing. Well, that's exactly what they did. They won 3 in a row, and they did the same thing against the Cardinals in that World Series, down 3-1. Well, after the Ortiz home run Friday night, I said the same thing to John Gibbons. Remember, a 3-game winning streak is nothing. And they put together 3 in a row, 3 more. That's the longest winning streak all year. So specifically to answer your question, I thought it could have gone either way, either out of the playoffs or when in with their starting pitching. And that was with the six-man rotation, too, kind of catching your breath a little bit, whether that worked out exactly the way they wanted or not. Now this team has the momentum to go a long, long way and into the World Series.
Boy, what a different conversation it is if they don't make the postseason this year. We're having a kind of an ugly postmortem right now, I'm thinking.
You really are. In fact, during the six-man rotation, when each of the pitchers had like 3 or 4 starts, I looked at their ERAs going in, used this on the radio too, and then I used the ERAs after, and they were much more significantly higher regarding two-plus runs across the board, except for, I think, Jay Happ did pretty well, and then Marcus Stroman, he actually lowered his a little bit. But you're right. Everything in hindsight is so easy to talk about. One of the things that I remember meeting John Gibbons the first time when he came aboard, I think it was 2002 or 3, he said to me, Jerry, ask me anything. This is when he was a bullpen coach. He wasn't even the coach at that particular point. Ricciardi brought him in, I think, to manage the club in the back of his mind. But he said, remember, ask me anything. Baseball is a game where there's no black and white. You can talk about anything. And that's how John approaches his job as manager, too. People think he's laid back and he's just letting it all unfold. No, John knows exactly what he's doing, but he also knows there's one side and then another side you could also talk about.
Yeah. You see, what I've always found with him, and I wasn't around Cito when Cito was winning World Series, but I was here when Cito, the second go-around with Cito. And I found with Cito, you could talk to him about strategy. Cito wanted to be respected. I could go up to him one-on-one and say, Cito, I didn't want to ask you this in the group setting, because I'm not doing this to show you up. Can you just kind of walk me through what the thought process was here? And he was great because he appreciated that, you know, you wanted to learn something. And I didn't approach it as you were wrong. Just tell me why you did it. But John Gibbons is different. You can openly do that with John, and John is perfectly, and I'm not saying one thing's right the right way or the wrong way, but John's perfectly comfortable explaining a strategy in front of a room full of reporters.
He's also perfectly comfortable saying, I don't know. Like, I'm not
sure.
That's
the other thing. Yes. That's the other thing.
That is, and you know what the third thing is? He's comfortable in his own skin. He doesn't have to react to
100%.
Media, bloggers, tweeters, fans who are booing, get him out of there. What are you doing, Gibbons? No. John is so comfortable in who he is. That's a plus for all of us in any walk of life. And then after that, he reminds me a lot of Cito from the standpoint he delegates to his coaches. He lets them play. They're never looking over their shoulder when they make a mistake. And baseball is a game of failure. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that a lot. Pitchers, when they give up a base hit or two, they're not looking out in the bullpen to see who's warming up. And how about the other day, he brings in Brett Cecil once again mm-hmm. after three missed opportunities Brett's had here, going back to the home run by David Ortiz. That's when everybody in that clubhouse says, John, thanks for having my back. And Cecil will only get better from that. Now, if he'd given up the base hit right there, who takes all the flack? John Gibbons.
Well,
but if you're going to manage 25 people, you have to have their back, all 25. And they have to know that. And that's the value of John Gibbons.
We had a very hypothetical discussion before the last game against Texas about the lineup. And just throwing out the idea of moving Tulowitzki up ahead of Martin, it was just talking. And John, you know, John said, well, you know, we're winning. I mean, why would I do that? To me, it's unnecessary tinkering. And he said, you know, I'm not saying anything about either of those guys, but he said, just imagine you showed up at work one day. You're in a role. You're doing pretty well, at least. You know, the company's doing well. And all of a sudden, you got a different job. And nobody's told you why. You just look up there and you go, oh. And, you know, and then I started telling about when I first started covering baseball, the first interview, the first manager I spoke to when I was in covering baseball in Montreal, the Cardinals were in town. It was midway through the season. I walked up to Whitey Herzog because Rick Hummel, who was a friend of mine, said, you know, I said, Rick, I've never written a baseball game. He said, you know what? Talk to the managers. Start with Whitey. I went up to Whitey, introduced myself. He said, you know what? Come into my office tomorrow. I'll give you an hour. And he'd just ask anything. But one of the things Whitey said, and I told John this, he said, you know what? He said, I remember him looking at me and saying, sometimes I come in here, I put Ozzie Smith down in the number two spot, I fill out my lineup card, I put it up there. He said, then I just stand back. He said, because sometimes in this game, you get in your own way. And John Gibbons doesn't do that. John Gibbons doesn't get in his own way.
No, he does not. And he's someone who looks at the big picture. He's confident in who he is, too. But he wants everybody to excel. And that's the whole idea. Get back, take it back, and then let the game unfold. But who mm-hmm. manages the bullpen as well as anybody in the game? John.
Yeah.
And he has a feeling, a kind of a sixth sense. But I remember when we first met, he was out in the bullpen. I didn't know him. And I'm talking to Carlos Tosk at the batting cage. And all of a sudden, this guy comes up next to me. And he says, you know, I know some baseball, too. I'm John Gibbons. And you know what the whole value is? He's a catcher.
Yeah.
That's why catchers make such great managers, and in this case, Joe Siddle, too, as broadcasters, because not only do they have a sixth sense for the game, what do they have to do as catchers? Manage people from 13 pitchers on up regarding September call-ups or whatever. That's not easy. It's what you're talking about, too. When you walk into an office or here at the Rogers Center, and you have a lot of people there, we're all different. We have to be treated maybe what's best for us, and who gets to that to the best for me? John Gibbons.
You know what? If things go differently that weekend in Boston, we're probably talking about somebody replacing John Gibbons, which doesn't mean he was a better manager before or a worse manager after. It's the reality of the business. He understands that. Now we're probably talking about John Gibbons getting extended.
And, Stephen, you make a good point, too, because let's say that happened. Let's say they got swept in Boston and John was fired. John would be the first one to say, that's okay.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
baseball. I'm going to go back home to San Antonio, which he did already one time, and manage the San Diego Padres AA team in San Antonio. There's someone who loves baseball, but it's not about him, and he would have been okay with that decision because of that comfortability in his own skin.
You're right.
You know, when I look at those 92-93 Blue Jays teams, the great teams, sometimes I think that we, fans, media, we underestimate how tough those teams were. They had some tough guys. I mean, guys who played hurt, guys who played hard, Kelly Gruber, guys like that. How does this Blue Jays team stack up? And I know this is kind of a cliche-ish thing, but how does it stack up to other teams you've seen in terms of toughness? Because I'm watching that game against Texas and the way they won, and that was kind of a bunch of guys who played every day, not as fast as they were in May, not as healthy as they were in August probably. And that play was Edwin going into second, Russ putting the ball in play. It was a double play grounder, I know that, but Russ beating it out to first base, forcing the throw, and Donaldson coming around and scoring. Three guys who play every day, three guys who were banged up. Can you talk about just how tough this team is and how tough a baseball team has to be to get to the ALCS or the NLCS?
Yes, and I'll go back to someone who just threw out the ceremonial first pitch, too, because in 92 and 3, he was as tough as nails. Dwayne Ward.
Dwayne Ward, yes.
Okay, who's the Dwayne Ward on this team? Jason Grilley. Look at him after he gets two or three outs. He comes off that mound. He's got the crowd in a frenzy because he's in a frenzy. That's one example. Now, who's the oldest team in Major League Baseball? The Blue Jays. That was never said before, I don't believe, in 40 seasons here, of Blue Jays baseball, because the Yankees were sellers for the first time since 1989. Right. So they went from all that experience down to a lower level. So now the Blue Jays, average-wise, age-wise, are the oldest team in baseball. But they're not old. They're fiery. There's Martin you talked about, Josh Donaldson, Encarnacion Bautista. The other thing I like, too, about Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, and we could talk forever about that because now both their teams are in there, they're people who say, Jose, Edwin, you play. Take it to the nth degree. Win that World Series. That's why you're here. Then let the future take care of itself. You don't have to bow down to players' demands and contracts and situations like that. No. But this team has come together like the 92 and 3 teams, Jeff, because they are hard-nosed competitors. But age and experience, there's no substitute for that either. Plus, they can compete.
I said we'd go to the phone lines, and let's go to the phone lines. Tony and Barry. You're on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Say hello to Stephen Brunt and Jerry Howarth.
Good day, gentlemen. How are you?
Hi, Tony.
Hi. First of all, Mr. Howarth, congratulations on all your years with the Blue Jays. It's been an honor listening to you, and I'm sure Tom is very proud. And thank you for all the memories so far.
Well, you're welcome, and please call me Jerry. My dad's up there with Tom, and I'm sure he's smiling right now at Mr. Howarth. But Jerry's good for me.
Okay, sorry. I just wanted to get your opinion on this team these years and the team, the 92-93 World Series champions, as far as the differences and similarities and exactly seeing where they're going to go and how they're going to make it through and bring this home to everybody.
Well, that's interesting, Tony, that you talk about that. 92 and 3 were special teams, no question about it. People have asked me which team that I thought was the best team, and I said of the two, I thought the 92 team, because of the pitching and the bullpen and Dwayne Ward in the eighth inning and Tom Hanke in the ninth. Those games were over after six innings. And they had gold glovers, they had Hall of Famers, and pretty close to Hall of Famers as well. I don't think you don't want to get into too much of the comparison aspect here and there, but I think this team, for me, is even a little stronger than last year's team, which kind of ran the table and then at the end got beat by Kansas City. And why I say that is because of the competition, the people who are now in the bullpens, even without Benoit, but the people on the field. And that's what reminds me a little bit of the 92 and 3 teams. They were competitors, too. And you get on a roll. And actually, this is the first time the Blue Jays have been a wild card team. And I like being a wild card from the standpoint that while everybody else is resting and sometimes rusting, you're playing. And I thought that was a big advantage for the Blue Jays.
Jerry, is this rotation top to bottom, 1 through 5? You know, they only went 7 deep this year, but you know, whoever you decide is your fifth, Liriano or Dickey. Is this as good and deep a rotation as you've seen
in
Toronto?
Yes. I'd say it's right there with the 92 team.
Yep.
With Jack Morris leading the way. And I think for me, Jack's a Hall of Famer. I hope the Veterans Committee puts him in there. But yes, when you look at the five starters, I thought they were excellent. If you throw in Francisco Liriano, now you have even a stronger six-man rotation if you wanted to go in that particular route, and Francisco hopefully will come back and lend his services to the bullpen. But you start to kind of, even talk about this starting rotation, I would compare it to not as good maybe or even better than 92 or 3, but the mere fact we're having this conversation, that would be three teams with outstanding starting rotations, and probably you could look back at the three best teams in 40 seasons regarding the starters.
Clifton in Etobicoke, you're on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Hello, my friend.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Now, I want to continue on this theme of Gibbons managing people, Jerry. Now, on the day of that wild card game, when he decided to go with Marcus Stroman, despite all the calls from these numbers guys saying that it was a wrong decision. Now, and I want to commend Jeff and Steven here, because on the morning of that wild card game, they were saying that they strongly believe, which I did also, that one of the reasons why John elected to go with Stroman there is because of Stroman's, you know, fragile ego. And he had to do everything to hold on to this kid here going forward. Now, Jerry, like Cedar Gaston, I've been a strong backer of John Gibbons because of that. Now, he doesn't see these guys like, say, Stroman as a number six, a pitcher. He tries to, you know, to find out what it is that makes these guys tick. Now, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, a game against the Yankees, he pulled Stroman in the seventh inning when he was going great. But he saw the lineup that was coming up, and it was the right move to pull him then. But he took him over to the lineup sheet, and I talked to you about this before, Jeff,
mm-hmm.
and showed him the hitters that were coming up. Because we saw before where Stroman, you know, acted out of line, you know, where he tried to show the manager up, and that would have been another situation where he might have acted, you know, in that same way. But John Gibbons took him over, showed him what was coming up, and, you know, with his arms around him, and I thought, man, here is a manager. He didn't have to do that. But the guy's a young kid and very delicate, but he decided that, you know what, this kid, like you said, Jerry, he's going to get the best out of this kid. So whatever the means are that he has to use, he's going to do it. Because in the long run, Jerry, these are the guys that are going to come true for you.
Well, that was very well said, Clifton, and it reminds me of what John Gibbons' strength is, and I think people forget this. Whether you're Clifton calling in or a fan, what's the season for a fan? One game.
Yep.
John Gibbons manages 162 games, and that's how you manage people, not just for this one game where it can be criticized later. It's all about results, and so if Stroman doesn't do well, okay, that was not a good decision. Should have been Francisco Liriano against Baltimore. That's part of fandom and being a good fan and a fanatic, if you will, in baseball. But John Gibbons, from spring training, he can't look at it that way.
Yeah.
He has to look at it, I've got 162 games, you've got 33 starts, you've got this many opportunities in the bullpen. That's what John is so good at.
Sometimes, I remember J.P. Ricciardi saying one time, you know, just because something doesn't work out doesn't mean it wasn't the right decision at the time. When he said it, I kind of looked at him. When you think about it, that's true.
It is.
That is true. Just because it doesn't work out doesn't mean it wasn't the right decision mm-hmm. at the time.
Look at manager Joe Torre. He managed Cleveland. He managed Atlanta, I beg your pardon, the Mets, and St. Louis. And for all three teams, when he finished there and was let go, he did not have a 500 record. Now he goes to the Yankees and wins four World Series. Why? He had better players. Well, and they had money to keep those players, too, year after year, contract after contract. Believe me, it gets down to the talent and the players. And rarely do you see a manager fired because he couldn't handle the talent and the players. It's the manager like Terry Francona and John Gibbons who get there, and even Buck Showalter this year too, and Buck has done this over his career, who get there with maybe not the best talent in baseball, mm-hmm. but the best person to bring it all together and maximize what you have.
I don't know if we've seen a series where they're, and it's dangerous to start talking about whether or not a guy is likable or not because we really don't know them, but I don't know if we've seen a series where we're going to have managers, two more likable managers than Terry Francona and John Gibbons. Like I'm looking forward to these media sessions because they're both really likable on a very base human level. They're likable guys.
I've known Terry for years, and he's had his issues health-wise,
sure,
too. He's
yes.
a worrier. He's someone who's stressed out a lot. He told me one time, Jerry, I don't know how I can do this day after day, but I do, and I enjoy it. But he said, I put too much pressure on myself. It's just something I enjoy doing. I love baseball. I want to win. But you're right. Terry Francona, John Gibbons, it's great because the players reflect, too, who their manager is. And you don't get here unless you can relax. You have to have talent, no question about it. But under pressure situations, and look at the Blue Jays the last couple of weeks of the season, You only get there if you can relax and maximize your abilities, and a manager brings that out.
Let's go to Ritesh in Toronto. You're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Stephen Brunt, Jerry Howarth, and Jeff Blair.
Hi, good morning, gents. How are you?
Good, sir.
Excellent. Just a comment quickly and then a question for Jerry.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, Jerry, you and Tom have a very, very special connection with me. I moved to the country in 91, and just around the time the Blue Jays were experiencing the success, and it's your voice that defined our household for the very few months that we're in this country in a new place. And I want to tell you that it completely bonded our family. My dad and I were trying to sit together figuring out, you know, what baseball is, because we are from a cricket-playing country, and you guys helped us on, and I'll never forget that connection, so thank you for that.
Well, Ritesh, thank you. Just to pause right here, and, you know, it was just a couple of days ago, my partner, 11 years ago, passed away. It's hard to believe, October 9, 2005, but I appreciate you saying that, and I know Tom is listening, too, and that's very thoughtful. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. Now, one quick question for you, Jerry. It's a little bit non-baseball-related, but it's a little bit more about your day-to-day craft. I listen to a lot of away broadcast during the game for a couple of innings just to get a flavor on the other side through my MLB app. And I noticed that some teams, their play-by-play guys, refer to their home team players as us, and that this, you know, our team just needs a run to tie things up. And, you know, I noticed one of the things that I really enjoy about our broadcast is your sense of objectivity. I just wanted to find out from you, is that a personal preference or is that more a club policy?
Well, I think
great question.
Yeah,
great
it is
question.
A good one, and I've been asked about this a lot too. And when young sportscasters send me their information and their tapes and their work, I encourage that. I always tell them, be yourself. So the announcers who are we and they and us and there are a few of them. That's okay because that's them, and I think they're probably their markets learn to identify with that. For me, I've never been that way. I do love the game, and the game itself is to be highlighted. Everybody knows I'm the Blue Jays announcer. I think that's fair to say. But after that, it's the game and what's happened here. And that great play by that shortstop there, Xander Bogaerts for Boston, whatever it happens to be. But that's just me. And I like that. But there shouldn't be one pattern for every broadcaster. You be you.
Appreciate the call, Ritesh. That was a great question. Thank you.
Jerry, I want to ask you, because, you know, Jeff,
I was just going to say, Ritesh, if you ever do figure out baseball, please call in and let us know.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Yeah, that's great. You know, because Jeff and I have talked about this. You know, how from journalistic objectivity or whatever it is we do now. You know, whatever we call, you know, content providing objectivity, I guess is what we are now, right? But look, I'm a human being. And I especially root for people. I root for good outcomes for people I like. And you know, we're talking about John Gibbons. I root for John Gibbons. He's a person I like. I hope good things happen for him. And when he wins, I'm very happy about that. How do you? Again, from this kind of position of objectivity, but you're with one team. How do you enjoy their success? How do you allow yourself to enjoy it when things are good?
I think part of it just is a blessing of how I approach life in general and just taking it all in and not being too judgmental and I'm a little bit impulsive. I can be that too. But to answer your question, from all the player standpoints, and when I was younger, you did root for the players. Now I root for the manager like you do and the coaches because I'm 70.
Maybe that's what it is.
And these players are 25. They look at me. I could be their grandfathers. But overall, I want success for not only the players, but the team. And the team includes the manager and the coaches. And the team includes the front office, too. And I see how hard from Pat Gillick and Gord Ash all the way on through J.P. Ricciardi, all the rest of them, Alex Anthopoulos. And now Mark Shapiro here and Ross Atkins, I see how hard they work. So having been here for 35 years, you can begin to appreciate the body of work, not only my own body of work, where you kick a few here and there, and that's okay too. You learn to live with that. But when you look at the big picture of the Blue Jays organization and all the men and women, young and old, who put that together in those games, that's who you really root for. But the bottom line is this. There's a reason why you lose and a reason why you win. And many, many times, and I'll say this on the air too, the Blue Jays tonight didn't lose this game. That team won it. And that's baseball over 162 games. And remember, these runs here that the Blue Jays are on this last couple of years, and here they are, the oldest team in baseball, there's no guarantees next year is going to carry over again. So enjoy the moment. And that's always been my philosophy in life. Enjoy the moment. You are not promised tomorrow. And I think that helps carry me through the day and the people involved. And if they have a good day, I'm having a good day too.
416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. It's the Hour of Howarth. We have Jerry Howarth in studio for another half hour. We'll be back with your calls. The Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brent and Jerry Howarth. God, that's a mouthful. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now back to the Hour of Howarth on The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunn and Jerry Howarth. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. We have Jerry in studio for another half hour. Let's not waste any time. Let's go to the phone lines. Tom in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you, Jeff. First of all, I just want to congratulate Jerry on, I was very touched by your response to the First Nations letter. I thought you had made that decision as one of the broadcasters, significant broadcasters in North America, about just calling the team Cleveland. A while ago, I had said that to someone. And I just wanted to let you know that for several years, I've been writing a letter to the commissioner's office when Mr. Selig was commissioner. And it was on Jackie Robinson Day. And I always wear my Montreal Royals Jackie Robinson shirt to the Sky Dome over my Blue Jay shirt. And I asked him to start making a movement, do the right thing, and help to change the name, especially of Atlanta Braves. I mean, we know about Washington and how racist that is. And I didn't receive one word of response from his office over those years. I sent the same letter to Mr. Manfred, and I did get a response last year. I felt it was very political. This issue is, I just feel like there's such disrespect. They dishonor a whole culture, especially with the tomahawk chop. I just, you know, these are sacred traditions within the First Nations, and they're being trashed in sports. And the First Nations elders asked many years ago to change. They were outside the stadiums. I think maybe, Jerry, it was when Atlanta and Cleveland were in the final, and there was very few broadcasters really got involved in it. And I hear this, so I was going to boycott this series. It's very difficult because I'm a huge Jays fan. I love the team, and you know, I saw that logo on the Boston Cleveland game last night, and I just can't. You know, I look at that logo and I think, how can people not get the absolute disrespect for this culture? So thank you very much, Jerry.
Well, you're welcome. I appreciate your words, and it's just one voice among many, but I enjoy my forum that way to be able to do that.
Joe and Whitby, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How you doing, fellas?
Good.
Good, man, good. I just want to talk about Corey Kluber and Andrew Miller. Kluber scares the heck out of me. He's just fastball, east and west, got a hard breaking ball, all the right-handed bats, just kind of scary to me. And one thing I wanted to talk about is you guys are probably an old-school crowd. I know.
We're just an old crowd. That's not necessarily
a big
the same
difference.
Thing. Yeah.
Wait, he's just talking about me. Go ahead, Joe.
Using Andrew Miller, like the closer position in just the ninth inning, I think that's fooey. A lot of the games have come down to the seventh inning, eighth inning. Most important time, that's when you want your best pitcher out there. Look at Showalter there, saving Zach Britton for nothing. Mm-hmm. Using Andrew Miller in the seventh and eighth inning when it's most important is absolutely brilliant by Francona. And it's something that baseball should just get on board with completely and start saving guys for the ninth inning when they're meaningless innings. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I'll throw this over to Jerry in a minute. But, I mean, you know, the manager that I spent a lot of time with when I was covering the Montreal Expos was Felipe Alou. And Felipe Alou's idea was the same as Terry Francona's. The game could be decided in the seventh inning. I want my best against best. So every now and then he would run out his closer in the seventh inning. We certainly had no problem using it in the eighth inning when John Wetland was there. He had no problem using him in the eighth inning. And I'm with you. I get why Terry Francona is doing it, Jerry. But you know, Stephen and I were talking about this a little bit. I find it funny because usually in the series we say, man, you know what? You got to have the lead. You don't want to get to the situation where they're bringing so-and-so in the ninth inning. Now it's almost like you want to see Andrew Miller as soon as possible, because that generally means you're doing something that has forced Terry Francona's hand.
That's right. And in a serious situation like this, playoffs, I can understand where Terry's going. But on the other hand, too, now with money in the game and statistics and contracts and agents representing players, you can't do that on a regular basis. The game has changed significantly. So that's why when the Royals got to two straight World Series, they pretty much had the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings covered. And that's what you have to do. And unfortunately, Joaquin Benoit did get hurt, and so they don't have the seventh inning cover. They can figure it out. But Grilly in the eighth and Osuna in the ninth. But Terry Francona here, he's cut from a different cloth, and it's worked for him to this particular point, and it's good. But only in this particular short-term situation could I see that happening in baseball.
Do you think they try, given the injuries to Salazar and Carrasco, the Kluber three times in a seven-game series, is that how you would try and set it up, Jerry?
Now, if you're Terry Francona, you certainly might look at that.
Yeah.
Because look at what happened when San Francisco beat Kansas City. Who got the last five innings and a save? Madison Bumgarner. And he'd already, I believe, had a couple of starts.
Yep.
And so you're looking at Kluber maybe doing just that too. Couple of starts, and then he's available, all hands on, for Game 7.
Sean and Tobermory, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I just wanted to touch on some of the leadership aspects of this team that's going on right now. Follow the team pretty closely, and over the last couple of weeks, obviously, we've seen a turn, and whether it's a case of winning fixes everything, or if one or two guys have stepped up particularly. Obviously, as a fan, it's tough to see what happens in the clubhouse, but from what I see on the field and just the presence of having Troy Tulowitzki and Russell Martin and their postseason experience, it's rubbing off on these young players. And I guess what I wanted to know was just, is it an on-field presence? Does that carry into the dugout? Does that carry into the clubhouse? And
well, you're going to have to tell me who the young players are, first of all.
Well, I mean, younger, I guess, Josh Donaldson, Devin Travis.
Josh Donaldson's 30.
Yeah, but I guess Troy Tulowitzki, even with his age, he just has that aura that he carries on the field.
All right, Jerry.
Well, I think for any winning team, you have to have more than one, two, or three leaders. You have to have leaders among your bullpen brigade. And Jason Grilly and LaTroy Hawkins last year, I think, were very instrumental in helping out a Roberto Osuna. Joaquin Benoit, he provided a quiet leadership, too. And then your catcher always has to be, I think, one of your focal points regarding leadership. And who's played 11 years? Russ Martin. Who's been to nine different playoffs? Russ Martin. Who's been there six straight years? Russ Martin. So you can start right there. I love the fact that you have two leaders on the left side of the diamond who have opposite personalities, Josh Donaldson and Troy Tulowitzki, but they both lead, and they lead by example. Edwin, in a quiet way, leads too by example. And to Sean's comments too, a lot of this is in the clubhouse where fans are not privy to this, but leadership comes over 162 games when you get your brains beat in, or you've lost five in a row, or you've lost three straight one-run games in the eighth and ninth inning. Leadership is, that's okay. Tomorrow's another day. And then young players see that. Devin Travis has absorbed all of this. So has Kevin Pillar. They've seen this happen right here in their own clubhouses. Then they take that to the field. That's leadership from many, and the Blue Jays have a lot of experienced players to lead, and they do lead.
Now, you've seen a lot of these teams up close, Jerry. The chicken and egg proposition, clubhouse harmony begets winning, or winning begets clubhouse harmony?
Winning comes first.
Yes.
It's almost like Jim Leland said, chemistry is great in baseball, but chemistry only comes from winning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, look at how, and this is not just to look at the last couple of weeks, too, with all those pressurized games. I think it was Russ Martin who said, we've been playing wild card games here for the last week and a half. But when you go back to spring training, too, leadership is a quiet confidence, and then it gets vocal, and then you amp it up a little bit more. Then you add a Jason Grilly, and this gets back to Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. They have really augmented this club and made it better. It was a very good team to begin with. They've made it better. But that leadership comes in many different ways, and you can see it first and foremost for a fan on the field. What you can't see is even more leadership behind the scenes, and that's where John Gibbons is so good, saying, this is my team. Thank you very much. They can lead by example. You know, when Sparky Anderson had the Detroit Tigers there in 84, his best asset was not him or his coaches. It was Kirk Gibson. And after that 35-5 start, Chet Lemon started to kind of do some things in center field and lollygag around, and Kirk Gibson got in his face and said, play or get out. And, you know, much to Chet Lemon's credit, he started to play. But you need players to do that. Mm-hmm. And the Blue Jays have players who can get in other teammates' faces.
This is your live cue to call, by the way. Tell us the Win Your Way to the World Series code word and be the ninth caller through now to qualify for an all-inclusive trip for two to Game 4 of the World Series, courtesy of our friends at Miller Lite, the official beer of Major League Baseball in Canada. The numbers, as always, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. The prize includes return airfare from Toronto, two-night accommodations, $500 U.S. spending money, and, of course, a pair of tickets to Game 4 of the World Series. The grand prize winner will be announced during primetime sports with Bob McCowan on Friday, October 21st. For further details and full contest rules, go to sportsnet.ca/590. That, Jerry, if the Jays can beat the Cleveland Indians, there could be some interesting cities to go to the World Series.
Yes.
Washington, Chicago, San Francisco.
Well, the way, LA. The way I would look at that is the Blue Jays-Cubs World Series would be a win-win.
Yep.
Yeah, how do you think that'd go over in the States? Do you think anybody would be cheering for the Blue Jays in the States?
It doesn't matter. If the Blue Jays get there and their chances are very good, like they were last year, but Kansas City had such a good mm-hmm. team, I'm not sure now, other than the Cubs, if there's a team as good as Kansas City last year, and the Blue Jays played them, I really felt that in that last game, that last situation there, if the Blue Jays tied it and went ahead, I think they would have won Game 7 and won the World Series over the New York Mets.
I agree.
Oh, I agree completely.
And I think right now the team to beat, obviously, the Chicago Cubs, and the Blue Jays in Cleveland, either team can do that. And if it gets to the Cubs and Wrigley Field and the storied 108 years, wouldn't it be so much fun if the Blue Jays are in it to try to either upset that or be part of history?
Before I let you go, with this series coming up, Game 1, who do you start?
Well, there are all kinds of different possibilities. For me, Marco Estrada on yep. the road has been so solid. We just saw that in Texas where the Blue Jays needed him. And then after that, his road numbers are very good, too. Aaron Sanchez, even though the one start he had in Cleveland this year, he didn't do too well. I think he went 4 or 5 innings, gave up 4 or 5 runs. But if you're looking at a situation where who do you want to pitch in Game 6 and 7, you could easily start a Marco Estrada and an Aaron Sanchez on the road. Then you go to J-Happ in Game 3, where he beat Cleveland here mm-hmm. in the Rogers Center, 7 1/3 innings, I think 1 run allowed. He could then be your 7th game pitcher if it got to that. Aaron Sanchez could pitch in Game 6 back on the road again, where his numbers are very good. His ERA is about 2 runs lower than I think they are at home. So I could see Estrada, Sanchez, Happ, and Marcus Stroman, who pitches very well at home, and that's why he got that start against right. Baltimore. To me, that's a pretty good scenario right there among what would be many, and I'm sure John Gibbons, Mark, and Ross are talking all about that. But I could see Estrada, Sanchez, Happ, Stroman.
Jerry, as always, it was a real pleasure having you in here. Thanks so much. I know it's a long haul. It's going to get longer, hopefully. Hopefully we've got another couple of weeks of baseball or 3 weeks. And, yeah, thank you very much. It's always great having you in here. Obviously, the lines are full. The fans love talking to you, and we really appreciate it.
Well, Jeff, thank you. Steven,
pleasure,
too.
Jerry.
And we will see you in Cleveland. Of course, you're maybe going to stay here.
We're both staying here.
Well,
we'll see you.
We have to keep these seats warm. Yes.
We'll see you for games 3, 4, and maybe 5.
Yeah, maybe. Jerry Howard, the voice of the Blue Jays, going to continue the baseball discussion. Kevin Barker slides in. It's time for Baseball Central, the home of the Blue Jays. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.